Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Wade, it opens wide for Wade. What a dunk! Morning clock is done. Here's Wade against Green. Euro step. Basket.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, David?
I am doing great. Had my knee drained, and I'm ready to talk Heat basketball for the next hour or so.
Are you ready to go with your knee drained? Can you do the podcast? That is impressive.
That's the kind of warrior I am, Wes.
We're going to talk about Wade getting his knee drained. We're going to talk about the Heat and the current playoff picture, and we are going to talk about some sandwiches as well. But first, let's talk about the injuries. Oh, the injuries that the Heat are facing. It's eight players on the most recent injury report. That's, of course, including McRoberts and Bosch, who are out for the rest of the year. But Whiteside's cleared to play against the Spurs, but he's on the injury report with a hand laceration. Dang has a knee contusion that he suffered in the last game. Beasley also bruised his elbow in the last game against the Pistons. And Chris Anderson is still doubtful with a calf injury. So, against the Pistons, the Heat had to play a five-guard lineup, and they had to play Haslam basically as their only big man for the stretch after Beasley left with an injury. I don't know what to make of this team right now. I don't even know. I'm surprised that this team has enough guys to go.
Yeah, it's and you forgot to mention the most startling injury, Shabazz Napier with a right hip pain.
Right hip pain.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Whiteside's cleared to play, and his hand was cut in half. And Napier's right hip kind of hurts.
yeah. Yeah, it's interesting how this team's kind of limping towards the finish line. And I know injuries are affecting teams all across the league at this point. I can't seem to think of any team off the top of my head that seems to be at full strength this year. And that's maybe an aberration from other seasons, but it seems like every team is dealing with at least one significant injury.
It always seems that the Heat are dealing with an injury of some kind, that they're adjusting their rotation in one way or the other because it's another injury. And we knew this was going to happen, right? We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Oh, this is as healthy as the Heat have been relatively all season. You know, when is that shoe going to drop, right? So we've seen stretches here where this team finally starts to, you know, not have the swine flu or not have, like, multiple calf injuries or Wade's out with knee stuff or whatever. But, you know, we had a couple of weeks, and now we're back there. And this is about as bad as it's been all season. Literally eight guys on the injury report is more than half the roster.
Right.
It's insane.
Tyler Johnson is next somehow. I'm sure. I'm not quite sure what injury he'll incur, but I'm seeing something in his near future.
We might as well. You know what? It's not. If you were in Vegas and you were just betting, it's not a bad bet to just say, let random guy. You know what? I don't even know what the odds would be, but you'd probably make some good money on it.
Well, hell, I mean, I saw Henry Walker take a fall at some point along the baseline against the Pistons. And he was on the floor for a while. I thought they were going to come and get a medic out there, but apparently he walked it off or whatever. I don't even know if he did get hurt or not, but I was thinking, oh, there goes another one.
Mario Chalmers, too. Something happened, and he was limping, and it looked like he may have sprained his ankle, and he just had to kind of play right. He went into the stands, right? He kind of like flew into the stands trying to save a ball or something, and then he ended up limping to the other side, and he like barely was moving, and Dragic was just like, nope, here's the ball. And he kind of, I guess, jogged it off a little bit. But he didn't even come out of the game. And when he came out, we were already playing the five guards we had. If he came out, I don't even know what – well, they probably would have played Napier, who didn't play at all that game. But that would have been horrible.
Yeah, it's tough to see how this team can hold it together. They're asking an awful lot of Dwayne Wade over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and Wade had his knee drained, just like you, the day before the Pistons game, and then went out and played in the Pistons game and dropped 40 points. And we'll talk about that individual performance a little bit later in the podcast, but you're right. They're asking a lot from Wade. They're asking a lot from Haslam. They're asking a lot from basically, they're asking a lot from Henry Walker, asking him to defend Andre Drummond and play center for a long part of that fourth quarter. It's just, they're doing a lot of, and you got to give Spo some credit here because he is just trying to find any kind of edge in any way that he can get. So I guess the idea with Walker was that at least you can take Drummond out of the paint on one end of the court, but it's just, it's kind of wacky. It just seems weird, this whole thing.
Have you heard any buzz whatsoever? And I'm pretty sure you haven't because I haven't either. Anything about Spoelstra being up for like coach of the year?
I haven't heard any buzz about that, but we should start buzzing about it right here on the podcast.
I mean, I'm not sure how much it's going to take if we start the buzz going here. But, I mean, everybody seems to think that either Budenholzer or Steve Kerr in Golden State, and I should say Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta, are the locks for Coach of the Year, right? Because they've taken their teams to, you know, their respective best records in their conferences. And I think that's what we're looking at here. Probably even Steve Kerr, just because he's gone a really good team that was coached by Mark Jackson last year to be even better this year. But you have to give credit. I mean, you know, I think Spoelstra, and you could make just as good a case for maybe Scott Brooks over in Oklahoma City, considering the number of major injuries and the fact that he's implemented these players, you know, that they acquired halfway through the season during the trade deadline. But I think more than Brooks, you'd have to give the credit to Spoelstra, just because, I mean, what he's rolling out there on a night-to-night basis, I mean, I don't even know where they stand as far as...
It truly is positionless, right? It's just... It's whoever can play at this point. It's like, can you walk? All right, you are playing center tonight.
Right. I'm looking forward to Tyler Johnson starting some minutes at center.
It's going to be great. He's got the vertical.
But he still looks like he's 6'2 out there, though.
6'2 and 16 years old. you know, it would be enough just to have Eric Spoelstra's name mentioned, you know, in the national sphere when it comes to Coach of the Year. Because I have no problem with Steve Kerr or Mike Budenholzer winning it. If I had a vote, I would vote for Steve Kerr. I think what he's done to build on what the Warriors have done has been fantastic. In just one year, he's completely changed that entire team, basically. That offense, at least. But and Budenholzer, he's been great. But people are mentioning like Greg Popovich just because he's Greg Popovich. And if the coaching award is for the regular season, I don't know what Popovich has done this regular season that really puts his name, that separates him from the pack, other than that he's just being Greg Popovich, right? Like, right. He's limiting the minutes. Like, I feel like Popovich is best in the playoffs, just like the rest of his players. They kind of coast the whole, not coast, but you know what I mean. They just do their own thing.
Sure. And they've got their eye on a bigger prize.
Right, exactly. And if these awards are regular season awards, which they certainly are, I don't really buy the idea of Popovich being in it. So I just want Spoelstra to get some sort of, you know, respect, or maybe not respect, but at least attention for the job he's done. And I don't know if it's me just being a Heat fan or that whole, you know, everybody against, you know, us against the world mentality, but I feel like people are very reluctant to mention Spoelstra. And when they do mention Spoelstra among the top tier of coaches in the NBA, everybody's like, oh yeah, and don't forget about Spoelstra. It's almost like it's like the hipster thing to say, like, it wasn't just LeBron that made Spoelstra. Like, he's a really good coach. It's like almost against the grain, I feel like, when you mention Spoelstra. Well, I don't know if you feel the same way.
No, ESPN had a recent ranking of coaches, front offices, mm-hmm. and everything else. Do you remember what those numbers were off the top of your head?
I remember last year the Heat ranked second, but okay. I don't remember the one this year.
Okay, I think Spoelstra actually ranked, I want to say, fifth among all NBA coaches. And that was surprising given that, you know, obviously Popovich is still considered largely the top coach in the league. But again, Kerr and Budenholzer despite their limited experience, were ranked among the top five as well.
Yeah, it's a very what have you done for me lately type thing.
Yeah.
And Kerr's coaching the probable MVP with Steph Curry, Steph and Kirk, we saw right. Spo is high, you know, as number two or wherever he may have been. You know,
Spo's actually listed as sixth on the list. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh.
Behind Rick Carlisle and Tom Thibodeau. So it's a really good company, but you have to wonder why, you know, again, Steve Kerr's done a very good job, but you know, that team was already really good last right. year, and maybe you can just maybe it's more about Mark Jackson being a bad coach than it is about Steve Kerr being a good one.
That's a great question. And then you have the Tom Thibodeau thing, and with as much flack as he gets for playing his guys too many minutes and, you know, revolutionizing the defense and the way defenses defend on the pick and roll and all these things that basically he did to revolutionize defense in the NBA, Spoelstra should get some credit for the whole pace and space thing. I mean, you talk about Kerr and the way he's coaching up that offense, Budenholzer and the way that the Hawks share the ball. But really, you know, Spo was the first of all these guys, and the only of those two, you know, of all these guys to win a championship with this pace and space, Bosch at center type, you know, stretch five movement thing, you know? And I don't know. I feel like he still doesn't get enough credit.
No, you're right. I think he should get more, and he's certainly done an incredible job here. The number of injuries, the number of different lineups, play. I mean, he's gotten Michael Beasley to come in and be a serviceable player out of position and playing defense at a higher level. And maybe that's more of a personal transformation of Beasley's end, but you still have to give credit to Spoelstra for saying the right things, for welcoming him back, for working together with Pat Riley to re-sign him, etc. I mean, it indicates how clearly the Miami Heat front office have a vision and how they work in conjunction with one another, and that's why they stand out as a franchise overall. And Spoelstra is the figurehead of that, and that he's the most public figure representing the front office. But he's done a hell of a job this year, and he should get some consideration. So, if we're getting the buzz started now, I think we should get some credit at the end of the year, too, when he wins the award.
Yes, if he wins the award, people should remember that the grassroots movement started on the Heat Check podcast. I really hope we get the credit there. They can write it in the reviews on iTunes. That's where they can write it.
One of many accurate predictions we've had this year.
We've been pretty spot on with a few of them, and I don't remember any of the ones we got wrong.
Yeah, that's generally the case, isn't it?
That was always my theory, is if I was an analyst, I'd always just go against the grain. That way, one out of 20 times when you're right, you get all the credit.
Right.
So I think that's what Barkley's theory is.
Like the whole broken clock method.
Yeah, exactly. The broken clock analyst. Coming up next on the Heat Check, Dave and I will finish each other's sandwiches. Welcome back to the Heat Check. Now we will finish each other's sandwiches playing fill in the blanks. David, why don't you go first this time?
Oh, wow, what an honor. Let's see. Udonis Haslam's recent play says blank about the Heat.
Haslam's recent play says everything you need to know about the Heat this season. Because throughout this entire year, and we've talked about it in the first segment, was injuries, right? That's been the theme, and it's been a different player stepping up for finite stretches of the year at a time, playing kind of above the level we expected them to be able to play at, and that's exactly what Haslam's doing right now. He's scoring, he's getting rebounds, he's shooting threes, for God's sakes. Like, this is what he's doing, and we've seen multiple players, Chalmers, Tyler Johnson, Chris Anderson, a lot of guys just kind of step up in the moment, have a week or so stretch of games where they're just outperforming and they are really just elevating the team with that energy and that spark, and that's exactly what Haslam's doing. It's great because it's UD, it's great because of the history with him, it's great because he's such a warrior and a team captain and all Heat fans love him, but it's not unlike what we've seen from other guys this season. We saw it with, you know, Mario Chalmers as early as when Wade first was out and Chalmers stepped up in Wade's place in the original version of this team, right? So, I mean, this is, it's everything that's been, this is a microcosm of the year. It's just how this season has been. So he will fall off just because that's what's happening, because he's Haslam. And I don't think this stretch is sustainable, but, you know, it wouldn't shock me if somebody else in a couple of weeks stepped up again. And hopefully somebody could step up for the playoffs in during that time.
That's a great point. And I like the comparison to Chalmers. And I can always appreciate when anybody uses the word microcosm in the sentence.
Dwayne Wade is to the Heat as blank is to blank.
Yeah, I had a tough time with this one, but for those of you who are longtime listeners of the Heat Check podcast, you know I'm a big comic book fan. And when I thought about it, I thought of Batman is to Gotham City. Dwayne Wade is to the Heat as Batman is to Gotham City, in that he is basically the only thing keeping this terrible, rotting ship adrift at this point in the season, because he's been such a resurgent player. And he's just fighting the tide here of the criminal element of Gotham City, just the way Batman does. Because, you know, this team, you know, we keep making the same discussion about injuries and inconsistency, etc. But where would this season be without Dwayne Wade playing at the level that he's been? I mean, we'd be having a completely different discussion at this point in the season, if not for the way he's played over the last couple of weeks. And, yeah, you give credit to Eric Spoelstra, give credit to Udonis Haslam and other guys for stepping up. But let's be honest here. Dwayne Wade is still the face of the franchise. He's still the most productive player on the team, and he's been the savior for this team for the last few weeks, maybe even throughout the whole season, and, you know, given some time, you know, he missed for injury. So again, I like the comparison there. I think he's kept this team going, and although a lot of people claim that, you know, his presence, and this is Batman now, his presence is what's led to the creation of all these villains, as they want to, you know, I guess emulate somebody like Batman. I think Dwayne Wade is doing an excellent job of just kind of leading this team, guiding it, and making sure that everybody steps in line. He's had a talk with Hassan Whiteside. He's had his moments with Michael Beasley, and he's just proving to everyone that he is the consummate leader on this team. Something that I had doubts. I think you and I both had doubts about it earlier this year, that he wasn't a very vocal leader, but he's changed that. You know, maybe it's just because of the way he's playing through injury, and it's obvious that he's playing through injury, but he's just been an incredible player, and I think he's been the savior of the franchise.
He's the hero that Heat fans need, but not necessarily deserve. Is that the line from Batman?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay.
I like it.
Great.
All right, so your next sandwich. I'd like to see blank getting more playing time off the bench.
I had a hard time with this one too, because my initial reaction was to say no one, because I kind of like the rotation the way it is, despite its ever-changing ebbs and flows. But I wanted to give you a real answer, so I'm going to go with Tyler Johnson, but I'm going to edit this question a little bit, because okay, I want to see Tyler Johnson get more playing time off the bench when he's playing well, but not when he's not playing well.
We can't do that to him. I mean, I know it's your answer, so you can do whatever the hell you want.
That's
to.
Right.
This is all just theoretical, but I mean, you know, given the players, the way I phrased it, where I thought of it when I thought of the question was, you know, given what we've seen from these players, you know, warts and all, who do you want to see up playing off the bench?
Well, everybody's playing off the bench except Napier, right? And Napier has not been effective when he has been playing, so that's fine. So I guess I'm going to go with Tyler Johnson, because when he is playing well, Spo does give him more minutes. So I just want to see more Tyler Johnson playing well so that Spo gives him more minutes. And on March 7th and March 2nd, well, let's start with the 7th against the Kings. He played in 44 minutes. Now, it was an overtime game. He scored 24 points, he had 6 rebounds and 6 assists. Now, those 44 minutes were a season high for him, career high. On March 2nd against Phoenix, he played 26 minutes and scored 26 points. But there's also been three times. These last three games, he's played 20 minutes with 0 points, 23 minutes with 2 points, and 20 minutes with 12 points. So from 0 points to 12 points, he's still kind of in that 20-minute range, right? So I'm okay with that, but when we're starting to get him 5 to 10 more minutes per game, that's when he's playing well, and Spo's been willing to let him ride that hot hand. But he's also scored just 0 points in 6 of 15 games in March. So it's very hit or miss with Tyler Johnson. I think we knew that already just from the eye test, but I'd like to see T TJ get more in playing time, because when he does get more playing time, he's playing well, and I love the energy that he brings playing when he's playing well. I could have went James Ennis. I don't know if that's maybe a name that you might have been looking at, but he hasn't been necessarily great. I like him as like an energy guy for a few minutes at a time.
Okay.
Who else is there? Zorin?
No, you're right. I mean,
you don't want to see Henry Walker play.
Limited at this point.
Yeah, right. Who's not hurt either? So I couldn't even pick Napier if I wanted to, because his right hip kind of hurts.
Overall, a good choice. I'll give you credit for that one.
All right. If Michael Beasley had a theme song, it would be blank.
Now, this one was really tough. I mean, basically, you're talking about the widest gamut of different options, genres possible. And I really could not think of it for the longest time.
I gave you some hard ones, didn't I?
Ultimately, though, keeping in theme with Michael Beasley's love of animated movies, I chose The Circle of Life from Elton John. And almost, I think most of the decision was based on the fact that I wanted somebody to Photoshop Simba being hoisted up by Rafiki along with Michael Beasley's face.
I'm making a note. I'm going to have our guy do it.
I don't know if anybody can do it, but if so, that will be my new avatar on any form of social media for the rest of my life, because that's what I want to see from that one.
Well, Beasley's face on Rafiki.
No. Beasley's face on Simba as he's being hoisted aloft by Rafiki.
I like that.
Right. You know, the whole presentation scene at the beginning of the movie, right?
Yes.
Before the credits roll out, yeah, that to me is a definitive moment of the film, and I think a definitive.
It's all downhill from there. It's at the very beginning. I have the note down. I'm gonna have it get done.
All right, perfect. I like that you exercise that kind of control and power too. That's excellent. But you know, seriously, it is a pretty heartwarming theme for this, you know, tough season for Miami that he's come in there. And I know we've talked about it before, but it is a great narrative, and I really appreciate the fact that Beasley's playing as well as he has. The fans have always been behind him for whatever reason here in Miami. They love the guy, and so the fact that he's playing out of position, playing as well as he has, yeah, he hasn't been lighting it up as far as statistically or production is concerned, but you know what? He's giving more effort this season than he has probably over the past 6 years of his career combined, so you've got to give him some credit for that.
He could have went with the Final Countdown. It's kind of his last chance.
That's a good point.
Could have went with Isn't It Ironic by Alanis Morissette. I just feel like that one fits, because now he's a defensive player instead of an offensive player.
Oh my god, I hadn't considered that one.
I think yours is the best, but I think there are so many songs that would have worked. Any Tupac song, I think, would have worked just because.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, there isn't any kind of genre that... I mean, I even went with Frank Sinatra's, you know, I Did It My Way at one point, and I was really thinking about that, and then trying to picture Beasley in a tuxedo smoking a cigarette listening to Sinatra, and it just didn't work for me, so I had to scratch that altogether.
Maybe smoking something else, but not the cigarette.
There you go.
Yeah. Alright.
Your sandwich, sir. Of all the people formerly associated with the Miami Heat, seeing Detroit's blank made me the most blank.
So, I like that you made this question, I like that you prepared this sandwich for me in the way that you did, because I really did think something like this watching the game yesterday.
Sure.
And it was seeing Detroit's head coach, Stan Van Gundy.
Yes.
Which made me the most nostalgic. It's when I see Van Gundy with his arms crossed on the sideline. It just looks like he really never left the American Airlines Arena. It just kind of, he looks like he's at home. I don't know, I love seeing him back in that arena, because he was the coach that brought, he was the coach when Dwayne Wade got on the scene. He was the coach that kind of took that first surprise team to the playoffs, and that was like my favorite rendition of the team, just because that was when Wade was a rookie, and you know, guys like Brian Grant and Odom and Butler and all those guys were on the team. But you know, it always kind of makes me feel like, what if Riley never came down? What if, because from all we know, right, Riley was kind of on the fence about it, And he eventually just said, you know what? I know we can win a title if I'm coaching, you know, or I know I can do the right things if I'm coaching and we have a real opportunity here. So he came down that year after and just took the reins from him. And Van Gundy went to the Magic, and then he was out of the league for a year, and now he's with the Pistons. But I don't know, it just always seems like there was a little more, like, unfinished business in Miami.
Okay.
I could have went with Joel Anthony, too.
Right, there were a lot of options. That's what I was going to say. Because, I mean, even on the playing side, you've got Caron Butler, you've got Joel Anthony, and even, you know, Sean
Williams.
Sean Williams.
Neon Sean.
I totally forgot what his last name was there for a second. But, yeah, so you've got three players, all of which have some experience playing with Miami. I guess, obviously, Caron's experience is, you know, going back a few years from that same era that you were describing. And then you look over on the coaching sideline, and you've got, you know, Van Gundy. You've got Malik Allen, who was a player for Miami. Went on, you know, not a very good one, but he was a player on Miami teams years ago. And then you've got Tim Hardaway. Tim Hardaway Sr. So, I mean, that's it really, you know, there's some definite ties to Miami on that Detroit sideline there. So it's just a lot of different memories, a lot of different feelings. You know, with Sean Webbs, you can be kind of, you know, indifferent about it, given that he's more of a representation of the theme that we've talked about many times, the different eras of the season when he was thriving early on in the year. And now all of a sudden he's, you know, been waived by three teams over the last, you know, month and a half or something like that since the trade deadline. So that's something altogether. Caron Butler, his time in Miami was way too short.
Yes.
I guess kind of like Van Gundy's, right? I
mean,
they're so perfectly linked, you know, as far as this team. Because that one year, I think a lot of Heat fans probably feel that way. If you're old enough to have remembered that one season, we're talking about Dwayne Wade's rookie year. It was really the best transition year from, you know, the former era, which was, you know, Alonzo Mourning and Tim Hardaway, Jamal Mashburn, etc., Pat Riley, all that. You know, then there's a really bad 2002-2003 season, which is what led to the fourth pick in the draft in the first place, fifth pick in the draft, which led to Dwayne Wade. And then all of a sudden, you know, Riley, for Heat fans, he was really the face of the franchise, even throughout all the different players and everything else. He was the guy who was going to restore Miami, or even build Miami in the first place, and he did. You know, Miami was a floundering franchise for almost a decade until Pat Riley came around. It just changed everything. And then all of a sudden he resigns, and it's still Van Gundy. You've got no idea what the hell's going to happen with his team. And instead you get a really fun bunch with Lamar Odom mixing it up there, with, you know, Skip to My Lou, Rafer Alston, with Dwayne Wade playing some point guard, Caron Butler being a pretty decent small forward guard combo. I mean, a really fun team. Really, really fun team. And then, of course, that ended within one year. It was funny because, you know, they went to that one year. They faced, I want to say, the New Orleans Hornets, am I right? Or was it the Charlotte Hornets at that time?
The first year, that would have been the, I think it was Charlotte. I don't remember.
I think it was Charlotte. I think it was Baron Davis in Charlotte, yeah. So that was... Was Jamal Mashburn on that team at that time?
I want to say he was.
Yeah, I think he provided the dagger in Miami's playoff hopes that he never could in Miami.
Right. It was kind of... Like, it says a lot about Riley, though, right? Because he hires Van Gundy. And Van Gundy was never a bad coach. That was never really the issue, right? So,
well, I had heard that he had lost control of the team. That his personality, as grating as it is sometimes, because he's just so emotional and he wears his emotions on his sleeves and everything else, he's always constantly exhausted because of the moment he lives now. There's an expression in Spanish where it's hard to translate, but basically he drowns in a glass of water is what it would be. Like it's just, if you add just even the smallest element of chaos or change or anything like that, he just doesn't respond very well because he's already filled to the brim with everything that he provides, you know, because he works so hard, because he busts his ass so consistently, so that if you add even the slightest bit of turmoil, it's too much for him to handle. And I think that was the sense that guys like Shaquille O'Neal got. And for a veteran like Shaq, he didn't want to have anything to do with it. And, I mean, Van Gundy led them to the Eastern Conference Finals in Wade's second year. but he couldn't get them over the hump. And maybe he lost a little control over guys like Shaq, etc.
He's a good X's and O's guy. He understands basketball. I think he knows how to run practices and get people in the right position and all these things. And he's almost like Rex Ryan in this regard, is I think they have a ceiling, right? Like they are very emotional, clearly emotional, like you said, emotions on their sleeve. But there's the flip side of that too, is that they can get guys amped up, right? And he can kind of get them to buy in for, you know, moments on end and build an effing wall, and then they go out and build the effing wall, right? So, like, he can kind of get guys amped up in that way, like Rex Ryan, but ultimately you kind of need that more sober Bill Belichick kind of Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, to really go the full length and finish the race, so to speak. So, I think SVG still has a reputation around the league as being a good coach, right? He got the Magic to the finals, and they were just out talented by the Lakers. It was really a question. I mean, and he built that whole team around Dwight, and that worked really well for him. But his whole act kind of got old there too, right? So, and you look at the guy they hired, Jacques Vaughn, who's since been fired, but he's like the opposite of Stan Van Gundy. He quotes poetry. He is like never smiles. He just kind of is there, right? And that was kind of his fault too. So they went on both ends of the spectrum there. But it's interesting. But, you know, you got to love when that team, just to circle back, is super exciting with a young Dwayne Wade and all those parts that we already mentioned, and then Stan Van Gundy just yelling and screaming and blood red in the face on the sidelines. I mean, that was just so much fun. So that's kind of what that always takes me back to.
And I have to mention the contrast between seeing thin, you know, handsome Pat Riley in his suits, etc., and seeing the slovenly walrus-like, you know, Van Gundy. What a contrast right on the sideline. But the fact that he was still able to get so much out of that really young team was great. I think a really rewarding season for a lot of Heat fans.
I got to make one more point, though. I saw a lot of talk about Joel Anthony. Pretty much every time we play the Pistons, oh, we should never let him go. Do you think that's a little revisionist of Heat fans? Because I'm not doubting Anthony's talent or I guess really his impact, what he meant to the team, and at least the locker room presence that he was. And I really think that's the gist of everything, is the locker room presence he was and how that affected the locker room and how the news was broken to the team. So, like, let's just say hypothetically they could have broken news in a more, you know, graceful way or something or what, but I feel like people kind of couple that with his on-court performance, and really, you know, he wasn't a factor on offense. He was a decent defensive, you know, guy, but he wasn't an anchor. He wasn't a shot blocker. He wasn't necessarily a rim protector, but he just always was. He wasn't a negative in the paint like so many of the guys on the Heat roster was. Do you think it's slightly revisionist, not to take anything away from Joel Anthony, but do you think it's slightly revisionist the way we view Joel Anthony when he was at the Heat?
Yeah, I agree. I think his production and his impact as a player was so limited and so frustrating, particularly in offense. Think about him starting alongside the big three, this team that could have been, I mean, imagine inserting Hassan Whiteside and all of his physical gifts alongside somebody like LeBron James and Chris Bosh at his peak and Dwayne Wade when they were playing in the finals. I mean, we would have won 4 straight finals for sure, right? Yeah. I mean, that's without a doubt. And so you've got Joel Anthony there, and, you know, he's clearly limited. It's just so tough, I mean, because he was such a good person and a decent guy. And so his contract worth was clearly in excess of what he was worth as a player, too. That was another problem.
Okay, last sandwich. Miami's ceiling this season is blank.
The first round of the playoffs.
That's the ceiling.
That is the ceiling. I've maintained that for long. I still think that this team, if you want to follow the Van Gundy analogy a little further, I think the emotions with just getting into the postseason are going to be so much that this team isn't going to be capable of doing anything else. It's just enough for them to fire their way into the playoffs, and then once they face whoever, probably Cleveland at this point.
Yeah.
It won't be enough to beat.
How far can they take that series? How many games?
Oh, I realistically think, because Wade is still phenomenal. And so I realistically think that they'll get some healthier players back. I don't think that they'll go so far as to welcome Rick Roberts back at this point of season, even though he's traveling with a team or whatever. But let's say you'll get Whiteside back. You'll get Lou Oldang, who matches up as well as you possibly can with James. So you have to consider Kevin Love's lack of playoff experience, Kyrie Irving's lack of playoff experience. They're going to come back into an angry American Airlines arena, and you're going to have a lot of hatred booming down from the rafters on them. They can get rattled. They can get shaken. This will go 7 games, but they'll win the deciding game back in Cleveland, and so that's ultimately where Miami season ends.
And that would be a really big victory, I think, for this team. I'm not a moral victory guy, but if you take the Cavs to 7 games,
right,
after they've basically were handed LeBron James, right?
Right.
And the Heat just rebuilt on the fly, and then rebuilt on the fly, and then rebuilt on the fly again, and then like a third time rebuilt on the fly. And they could take Cleveland to 7 games in the first round of the playoffs. That would be a moral victory. That would be worth talking. Like that would be feeling good into the offseason, I think.
Absolutely. I think fans would love it because then they'll see the potential of the Dragic Wade combo for another season. If Wade comes back healthy, you'll see Mick Roberts. You know, hopefully he'll be part of the team like we talked about last week. Chris Bosh will be back. I mean, just that potential starting lineup next year should they re-sign Dragic, that's enough to keep them aloft, I think. And yes, you're right. Being able to harass LeBron James a little bit into going a 7-game series. And you know, you could be deciding the fate of the NBA season, you know, because theoretically, let's say you push them 7 games and maybe you shake Kevin Love's confidence just enough, or maybe even a player on the Cleveland side gets injured and they're not available for a later round matchup. All of a sudden now you have Atlanta being able to advance past Cleveland, which is still an option, no doubt. Or maybe even the Cavaliers get upset in the semifinals. They don't even have to make it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. So you're changing the landscape of the NBA season and how it's remembered, because Miami's going to be so fired up, as we've seen over the course of the season. When they play the Cavaliers, they match up really well, and this is a team that could do some damage in that case. Next thing you know, Atlanta represents the Eastern Conference in the finals, and they go up against maybe the Warriors, maybe the Spurs, who knows? And that changes the outcome of this the finals dramatically.
I think the Heat can certainly win a game based on talent.
Sure.
If everybody's healthy, I think that they can get the Cavaliers maybe early on in the season. On the road or at home, I don't think it would matter, but I think they can get them in an upset. They've already beaten them 3 times this season, right? So, and I think they can get another game just on emotion. That first game in Miami, I think they could just get them with that crowd like you were talking about. And that's 2 games, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if this series went 1-1, you know, 1 for Cleveland, 1 for Miami. You know, maybe the Heat grab another one, and then the Cavs just win 3 straight. Because I think with LeBron James, once he figures it out,
right,
I think he'll rock them, and that'll be it. They can win 3 straight and close out the series. But I definitely could see the Heat getting 2 games and pushing it to 6, if not 7, for sure. Coming up next on the Heat Check is the performance of the week and cereal or not cereal. All right, let's get to your performance of the week. Hit him, David.
Dwayne Wade on Sunday versus the Detroit Pistons. 36 minutes, 14 of 27 shooting. 12 of 13 from the line. He finished with 6 rebounds overall, 4 assists, 1 steal, 1 turnover, and 40 total points.
Now, you know I hate vintage Wade, right? I hate when people say that, but this was vintage Wade. I went on a large rant about how I hate that on the last podcast, but this was 12 of 13 at the line. That's all you need to know, right? You see that, and you know he had a good game.
I was rewatching that game today, and you know, it's just amazing how he was still, you know, you have to look at the opponent, obviously, but there's still NBA players on that opposing team there, and they were just still biting for his up fakes. He was using his versatility in the lane. He was cutting past players. He had the mid-range game going.
He had a circus shot, a couple circus shots, right?
Yes. Overall, a great game. And you know what? I was listening to the Detroit broadcasters, and they were still calling it Vintage Wade. So I think, despite your rant, it's still going to stick around the league for a while.
Like I said, it annoys me to the core when people say that, but it was okay Sunday because it was a vintage performance. It was like, that was the old Dwayne Wade. It wasn't the newish Dwayne Wade. I'm sure it was new Dwayne Wade. It was a combination of everything he's done. But when he gets to the free throw line like that, and when he's got people biting on those fakes, and when he's hitting circus shots under the rim, there's really, like, that's what we grew up watching Wade, you know, or, you know, with Wade throughout his career. And it's only recently that he's kind of tailed the free throws and the throwing his body and the James Hardening, you know, what Harden is clearly influenced by Wade and the way Wade played early in his career. So, yes, it was a vintage performance. I'm reluctant to say it was a vintage performance. He also hit 12 of those 13 free throws. So that was fantastic. 92.3% at the line. And 14 of 27 from the field, like you said. I mean, he was efficient. He was all over the court. He was getting other guys involved. It was just a fantastic performance. And considering that the Heat had nobody on that roster that was healthy, pretty much, and he was coming off of getting his knee drained, reportedly, I mean, it's just amazing. You take all those things into consideration that he basically had to do it all by himself with four slumps around him, and Goran Dragic, I guess, doesn't count, but that was a fantastic performance.
But Dragic had a poor game, and that only had 10 points overall, 4 of 10. So clearly, he wasn't at his peak. He was able to get a lot out of, you know, you see that shared camaraderie there that they've had over the years. He got 18 points out of Udonis Haslem, 8 of 13 shooting for UD. So that was a great performance. You know, he gave me consideration for a stat line of the week, but I think you have to look at Wade and what he's done and just realize that he's carrying the team. Like I said earlier, he's been dominant over the last few weeks. You know, everybody across the league is noticing it. He gives the Heat a chance on any night when he plays like this. Maybe it was against a subpar Detroit team, but still, he was able to work his way past Andre Drummond, who was a very good rim protector, shot blocker, etc. Yes.
He didn't have the pick and roll game to go off of. There was no Whiteside. There was no Anderson. I mean, he did it all. He created everything himself. There was no easy way to get. And Drummond had more than 30 points. Reggie Jackson scored more than 30 points. I mean, they got really huge performances out of two Detroit players, and Wade did enough and set up his guys enough. We saw multiple setups to Haslem, to other guys, and he just did everything. He put the team on his back, and that was it. Shall we get to cereal or not cereal?
You got it.
Cereal, cereal.
Okay, the Spurs are,
to me, I think they're cereal.
The Heat play the Spurs Tuesday, and you're saying the Spurs are cereal because
it's tough to say. I think I mentioned
you seem
this
like
last
on the
time.
Cereal fence about this.
Yeah, I think they play very not cereal, and that, you know, Pop obviously has them very well coordinated. I think that they are obviously a well-coached team. They're a very experienced team. They know exactly what they're doing on their floor. They rarely make those kind of mistakes that you see so many other teams make. So you would say, based on their style, that a lot of people over the years, maybe up to prior to last season, they had dismissed as boring or predictable, when clearly it wasn't, and it wasn't anything like that at all. And they've changed the narrative around. But I think personality-wise, again, maybe this is just me, I kind of like, as I've gotten older, despite the clashes in the NBA Finals, I kind of like the Spurs personality. And I hate, and maybe I lose all credibility as a Heat fan for having said this, but their dry personality, their sense of humor, the camaraderie they share there, I kind of like that. And I would say that they're maybe like a sensible brand of cereal. Maybe a little Raisin Nuts action, something along those lines.
I'm going to go with Fruit Loops.
Oh, but that's, you know, that's...
Well, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because the Spurs, that, like you said, everybody said it was boring, right? It was a boring offense. You just knew what they were going to do and all this stuff. And I will say this, watching the Spurs is like watching a movie over and over again. But that movie is a really, really good movie. And sure. It's one of those movies that when you watch it, you kind of pick up something different every time, yes, right?
Exactly.
That's what the Spurs are, and that's why. And I think that that offense is like the Heat, and I've criticized Spoelstra for this earlier in the year about how they don't really run set plays. It's just kind of, there's a theory, there's like the clockmaker theory here is like, this is how this offense is going to run, but I'm not going to get down to specific X's and O's. You go here, you dive that way, you curl around this screen. It's pace and space, cut and pitch out and do all these things. And the Spurs kind of do that too. It's very impromptu, pick and rolls here and there. I know they have set plays, but they have those theories that they go after. And rather than an opponent studying them and saying, okay, these are your 15 to 20 plays that you're going to run, we can prepare for these plays, it's not like that when San Antonio is playing. It's more of an overarching theory that just basically dominates their thinking, and that's why people call the Hawks Spurs East, is because of the ball movement that they have is the same that's going on in San Antonio. So it makes them unpredictable. So when you take a scoop of Fruit Loops, you don't know what colors you're going to get, what combinations are going to be there. It's really, it could be any cereal that has multiples of anything. I just want Fruit Loops because they're delicious. But,
yes.
You know, you can get any combination. You never know what every bite's going to hold. And that's kind of with the Spurs. You know you're getting Fruit Loops. You just don't know which ones, right? And that's with the Spurs. You know on offense or on defense, you know what you're getting. You just don't know which variation of it it's going to be or what it's going to look like.
All right, I'll take the cereal analogy a little further, what you just said as far as Fruit Loops are concerned, and go to Honey Bunches of Oats.
Oh, wow.
Because it's a good, solid cereal.
Yeah, high in fiber.
Yeah, healthy for you, a little, you know, maybe a boring perception, but given the right circumstances, could be really delicious. And then, just like you pointed out, as far as what you never know what you're going to get with Fruit Loops, you could get a magical cluster of, I don't even know what the hell is in there, but that's all glued
oats
together with some... I'm sorry?
Oats.
Well, it's not just oats.
And honey.
Wes? Yeah, that's right. It's honey. It's oats. Sometimes it's blueberries. Sometimes it's like bananas. Sometimes it's a little bit of everything, depending on what kind of brand you get. It's a magical cluster, the size of a hailstone that you'll find in there. And that is what we saw during the NBA Finals last year. So, yes.
When you get that cluster, there's nothing better in the world in that moment.
That's right.
Thursday at Cleveland. The Cavs are... I'm hesitant to say cereal because I kind of think they're not cereal still, even though they're trying to be as cereal as they want, but with those Instagram posts and being buddy-buddy. But that whole Kevin Love not being involved is poisoning the cereal, right? That whole thing, I think that's a real thing, and I hate when people, oh, they don't have to be friends. They're professionals. They're on the team. Malarkey. They need to be, like, every team that LeBron's been on has been best friends, all the successful ones. And it's... You know, sports are different with the camaraderie and the teamwork and things. It's not like you're going into work in your office and you don't need to be friends with everybody in your office. This is different. This is a child's game that these guys are getting paid millions of dollars to play, right? So,
but is it different? I mean, seriously, like, you know, I understand that you don't. A lot of people, I think, want teams to be very friendly with one another, and I know that I certainly bought into that narrative over the last few years when I was watching the Heat in the Big Three era and thinking, man, these guys really genuinely seem to get along. And then LeBron leaves and maybe you have a little bit of a tension between Chris Bosh and LeBron James where they maybe don't seem as friendly as they once did, etc. So,
you know,
you sacrifice your personal feelings a little bit for the sake of the team, and that's fine. And I think Kevin Love just lacks the ability to stay out of it. And I don't know why he does that. It's almost like he wants to be, you know, I think that's why a lot of people in Minnesota were kind of glad that he left, because he seems to be a little, I hate the term, but he seems to be a little bit of a drama queen, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't buy it in all circumstances, right? I certainly don't think a team has to get along in all circumstances. And 100% of the time, that's what happens. And that's what results in a successful team, or an unsuccessful team is unsuccessful because they're not friends. But in this particular circumstance, Kevin Love's already on an island on the court, right? He's a stretch four, and they just push him into the corner and say, just shoot jumpers. And now that he's already isolated on the court. He's isolated off the court because he's not involved in these pictures, and he's not involved in these gatherings of whatever sort that they, whatever they are, right? He's not involved. And he's in these radio interviews, and he's kind of just voicing off by himself, you know. It's just kind of, he seems just so, you know, alone right now, isolated from everything else that's going on. And I think everything kind of is related in that way. You'd like to be able to separate what's going on the court and off the court, but they're so similar. Like, I don't think if you're Kevin Love that you can help but to feel like you're not really part of this team. And I feel like when it's one of your best players that feels like that, I feel like that poisons the locker room.
Yeah. So. But I mean, I feel it's almost like a situation of his own creation, though.
Maybe he wasn't in the hallway when they took the picture. And he didn't have to go on that ESPN radio and say those things. I completely agree. But I don't. Is it really a matter of whose fault it is and whose it's not? I mean, I think it's happening regardless, right? And I think that makes the Cavs not serial.
Okay. I know. Okay. I like the way how you tie that all together. But I still want to say that I think even if he doesn't get along with everybody, he's making it a big deal. He's bringing it to the media. And that's a personal foible of his.
Yes.
You don't air out your dirty laundry.
100% agree.
Okay.
But at least we know it's there. And yeah, I think we all knew it was there too before. Or at least we had a feeling.
Right.
So, Saturday at the Pistons. Are they serial or not serial, David?
Based on what I saw yesterday, even with Reggie Jackson there, I got to give him the no serial treatment.
Hmm.
I don't see any kind of joy in their playing at this point. I mean, I know that Jackson's giving them somewhat of a sense of hope, but already there's some frustration with his play, kind of why he burned himself out of Oklahoma City despite his talent. You know, he was benched for a couple of games. He wears out his welcome rather quickly there, and I think Detroit fans just seem to be going nowhere, and that was what they were hoping to change with Van Gundy there, but they've got... You know, they've got to clear some cap space there because they've got their two big men, you know, Monroe and Drummond, and there's a whole lot of issues affecting the team. They had a really nice run there, then Brandon Jennings goes down for the year, and that kind of takes all the fun out of them, right? I mean, you could say that team, post the waving of Josh Smith, was as serial as it can get, and then all of a sudden, not so much now. Now I think they're already looking ahead to their weekend and, you know, their week-long vacation in the Bahamas or wherever the hell they go in the offseason. I think they've checked out a little bit. So I'm going to say no serial.
I'm going to agree with you on not serial because Reggie Jackson's kind of fun to watch in a vacuum kind of way. And I think that's the way he plays. He just kind of plays like, I'm finally out of OKC, which was a successful team, but now I'm on my own stage and let me do my thing, guys. Like, just get out of my way. And we saw that even when Henry Walker was defending Andre Drummond, it's like, well, why don't you go to Drummond every single time? And there was a few plays in a row where it was either Jackson or somebody else but basically Jackson initiating the offense and not initiating it into Andre Drummond, which should be the play every time when it's Drummond, who's like 7 feet tall, versus Walker, who's listed at 6'6". And sometimes I feel like he just plays with that tunnel vision, right? He doesn't really notice those things. It's him, and it's the ball, and then it's the rim. And that's just how he thinks. And I think he kind of gets in that mode. And I hate these analogies are the worst. The ex-girlfriend in the sports analogies, they are... They're a radio, you know, sin. But Van Gundy, we talked about how he used to be a lot of fun in that first rendition of the Heat, you know, when Wade was a rookie and stuff. But he kind of got burned from that. He got burned in Orlando, and he's not... I don't think he's as serial as he used to be. I think he's kind of cynical. You know, he kind of got burned by an ex-girlfriend, and now he doesn't really trust girls as much anymore. So he's just kind of... I feel like there's no trust with him. He has no idea what's going to happen. He doesn't know when ownership or management is going to turn on him, like it did in the Heat in Miami. And he doesn't know when his own players, like they did in Orlando, are going to turn on him. So he's just kind of... I feel like he's kind of cynical and not as serial as maybe he once was. So I don't know if Detroit... I don't think Detroit's very serial right now.
The only thing is that in Detroit, he is management. So he's building the team there and coaching it. So he's kind of screwing himself.
That's true. But he's got ownership that can always just...
Sure. I don't think they care. I mean, they've been mediocre for so long now.
That's true. They have not been serial. The Suns... I'm sorry. Sunday at the Pacers... the Pacers are not serial, right?
That's, no.
Like, they're not. They're like the most I'd probably say the most unserial teams in the league are probably them, the Hornets, and the Nets, as far as just the three most bogged down, boring teams to watch in the league. Just teams that I won't even, teams that I don't watch anymore. And I try to watch a little bit of every team, and I just avoid them at all costs. I will watch the Justin Bieber roast tonight before I watch the Hornets or the Nets play, or the Pacers. Unless they're playing the Heat.
A Hornets Pacers game is something that you're not going to be drawn to, I guess.
Probably not, no. Unless I have money on it, which I never do. The Pacers, I think, when we talk about looking forward to next year, they just want their guys back, right? They just want to get Hibbert and David West back next year. They want Paul George to return next year, possibly Lance Stephenson, maybe if they can save him from Charlotte, I guess. I just feel like they're going to just try to get their guys back. And this season was basically over before it began. This team has never been serial at any point. Like, well, maybe like immediately after the All-Star break, they went on that 6-game win streak and they were kind of serial. But even then, they weren't fun to watch.
No, definitely not. They've got 3-7 over their last 10 games. They're 2 games back of Miami, anyway. They're just half a game back of Brooklyn in the 8th spot, so they can still make the playoffs, and I think a lot of people expect them to based on their defense overall. Paul George, any timeline with him? I know he's been cleared to, or I'm sorry, I think he was being, they said he was going to play at some point soon.
Maybe yeah.
Even as soon as last week, but that didn't happen, clearly, so has that been pushed back?
And that was before Durant's latest mishap, right?
Yeah.
And now, you know what, and we haven't really heard much buzz since then about Paul George. I think that really, and this is just me guessing completely, but when it's something like that happens, and it's a lower body, it's a foot injury, I just really feel like a team like a front office like the Pacers says, like, you know what, maybe it's not worth it. What's our ceiling this year anyway? And I know Larry Bird's old school and played with a back brace, but I don't know. I feel like at some point you get smart, right? And you say, really, this isn't worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. I guess a foot injury could be much more catastrophic for players than like a lower leg injury, even though the break was as bad as you could possibly imagine.
And yeah.
I don't even like thinking about it. But maybe you're right, though. I mean, I don't know if that's the scuttlebutt or not regarding the Pacers, whether or not they just decided, you know what, better not even take a chance, don't even rush them. It looks good for as a franchise that they're concerned about their players' well-being, that they're not trying to rush them out to the floor, etc. I just think the Pacers fan base is one that would say, oh, screw that. We want them out there. You got to play through anything, regardless of whether or not you have a rod inserted in your leg and you're being held together by, you know, scotch tape and chewing gum.
So the ironic thing about the Pacers is that I don't think anybody could be less serial than David West. And I don't think anybody eats as much cereal in the NBA as Roy Hibbert.
Do we have confirmation that he's a big cereal eater?
No, it's just me thinking. I guess a lot when it comes to the Pacers because I don't watch them at all. So, or Dwight Howard, I feel like he eats a lot of cereal.
Well, he's on. You know, they finally took the Skittles out of his diet, I think, right? So.
Yeah, but well, I thought I saw an interview that he eats multiple kinds of candy. So. Really, when you just take Skittles away, he's got a whole closet full of candy, I'm sure, right? Wouldn't you, if you were like a millionaire like that? Wouldn't you just have one just because?
No.
No?
No, I've never been a big candy man.
All right. Well.
Maybe I'm not cereal. Oh, God.
What have we been doing here this whole time? So the Heat went 2-2 in the last 4 games. That sounds about right for these next 4.
Right.
Yeah. And the obvious one is you lose 2 against the Spurs and Cavs, and then you win 2 against the Pacers and Pistons, but who knows how that's going to fall, right? It could be either way.
And, they're all road games. Some of them are.
The Spurs on Tuesday is at home, and then it's 3 games on the road.
Yeah, so that's I don't think, you know, San Antonio just recently destroyed Oklahoma City and Oklahoma City took it to us pretty badly. I know that doesn't really make much of a difference, but with all these players that you've got out, are you going to try to rush them just so they can get shellacked anyway? I don't know. I think,
yeah.
I mean, we could be witnessing one of the greatest games in Heat history, and that there are a team of scrubs led by Tyler Johnson and Henry Walker somehow combined to score 42 points and beat the San Antonio Spurs.
Well, Tyler Johnson, like I said, his last three games, 0 points, 2 points, and 12 points. 14 points combined in the last three games. He's due for another big game.
26 points out of Tyler Johnson on Tuesday.
Book it. and the other thing is that Pacers game on Sunday is the second game of a back-to-back because they play the Pistons on Saturday. So that's a little bit of a issue for the Heat. So, and I think all these games matter, man. It's going into the playoffs. They're kind of locked. Well, I don't think they're really. They're a couple games back of that sixth seed, but I don't really know if they're going to catch up with Milwaukee. I'd be surprised if they didn't just go game for game for the rest of the season, them and Milwaukee, right? So, but they're only like another game and a half, two games above that next kind of group of guys. So
it's more about staving off the fight for the seventh than it is climbing up to the sixth.
Yeah, and I think they really want you want to try to keep that seventh. It's definitely better than getting the eighth seed, I think, because there's no way they beat the Hawks. At least if you play Cleveland, like we've already talked about. Right. At least that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that eighth seed is like interchangeable in any given night. It's like a new person or a new team that could be in there. So, all right, David, good podcast. We'll do it again next week.
You got it.
All right, thanks for listening to The Heat Check. You can find us on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us, and you can find my writing, and you can find David's writing over at allyoucaneat.com. Thanks for listening.
Napa Know-How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.